Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. From the launch your online shop stage, all the way to the we just hit a million orders stage. No matter what stage you're in, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/special offer, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/special.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to the Nerd Nest podcast. I'm Bill. We've got Carrie and Rich joining me today. I hope that you guys all had a fantastic holiday break and Happy New Year. Oh, yeah, Rich, I know you did not have a fantastic break, did you?
I had a terrible time. It was the worst. I got sick on Christmas Day is when I started feeling it. And I was out for like 2-3 days. It was terrible. Don't do that.
It is the worst time to get sick is during the holidays. So like, did you have to cancel a bunch of stuff?
No, thankfully not. My son was also sick and he was worse off than I was. And so like, he didn't open gifts date on Christmas Day. He waited until the next day to open gifts. So that's how bad we were.
Wow. Okay. I'm sorry to hear that. Hopefully Carrie, you had a better time than Rich.
No, I was sick as well. I also had to work, but I could work remotely. It was actually the day after Christmas for me that I started getting sick. And on Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday, I woke up with a headache. And that is rough. That was a rude awakening. Mm-hmm. Also because I have to wake up so early for work. So it's like I have to do the morning report. I have a headache. I'm trying to take caffeine and ibuprofen. But otherwise, it wasn't too bad. Friday, I managed to like play video games and like be in a better zone. But it wasn't all that awesome.
How about you, Bill?
I was fine. Got to babysit my grandson a bunch over vacation, which was super fun. And then, you know, my kids were all here in the house for Christmas time. So it was awesome. We had a bunch of fun and, really tried as hard as I could not to do any work, and I mostly failed at that, but I still enjoyed myself. So
you didn't put yourself under the pressure of actually releasing a video though, so there's that.
Yeah, that's true. And it was all for another channel, which some of you guys know about and some of you guys don't, and I'm not going to tell you about it yet anyway, but like it was all for other stuff, and I'm just getting a backlog of videos before I post anything. But
love it.
Yeah, so I didn't have to worry about like posting a video and then looking to see how did it do I need to change anything. But you know, those of you who are here for the live show, thank you so much for showing up. Let us know how you're your holidays were over your breaks, or maybe you were like Carrie and you didn't get a break, or maybe you were like Rich and you were in bed the whole time feeling awful. So let us know what you guys did. Hopefully you were better off than both of those guys, because it sounds like they didn't have too good a time. But listen, we're here to talk about video games, and that's what we do here on the Nerd Nest podcast. So I made a post over on my YouTube channel, not a video, but like a post saying, I want to hear your hot takes, you know, just something that you guys feel like a lot of people would disagree with. And a bunch of people responded to that because I think people like to, they like to stir the pot a little. And so I asked the guys to go on that post and find a hot take or two that they thought was a good discussion topic starter. So I'll start. I went and found one, and it was from, it's J-Rod TV. And they said, I don't think games need to be 100% complete on launch. I like early access and watching a game become its best version. I like being an early adopter. And like the way that they're looking at it, you know,
a very hot take.
Huh?
I said, that's a very hot take. Some takes were lukewarm. Some takes were cold. I would say that one's absolutely a hot take. It qualifies for sure.
Absolutely. And that's why I picked it. But he started off as a super like a nuclear take. And then he kind of backed it up with information that I feel like almost like kind of justifies what he was saying. Because for me, like I look at a game like Baldur's Gate 3. And I look at the things that Larian Studios has said about the data that they get during early access and how they use it to craft a game. Like, you know, they get all these when you're playing the games, they get all these reports back from people who are playing. They're like hot spots where, you know, players run into an issue. And like you don't have to report anything. Like as you're playing the game, it kind of. In early access, it reports that information back to Larian, and then they can say, oh, look at this. Everybody seems to be screwing up in this one spot, and it's, you know, it's making them stop playing. So let's tweak that just a little bit and see if we can improve it. And I think that that's actually a really good way of thinking about that.
So
Baldur's Gate 3 is game of the year for last year. And absolutely. It's an early access game that shipped basically unfinished. What were you about to say, Rich?
So let's go a bit nuclear real quick. I want to ask you something, but before I do, I'm going to couch it, right? So like I think we would all agree that at the very least, transparency is important, right? Like if you're going to do early access, it has to be labeled early access. You have to know what you're getting yourself into. Given that caveat, with that in mind, Bill, how would you feel if Sony, Microsoft, and Nintendo started releasing early access first party games?
I don't know how I'd feel about it, but when I think about that, I think it depends on what kind of game it is. I don't like early access where early access gets you a competitive advantage in multiplayer, like that kind of thing. I'm not a fan of that.
Yeah.
But the way that Larian handled it with Baldur's Gate makes a lot of sense to me. That being said, When you're talking about like the big console makers doing their first party stuff that way, like my gut tells me that's bad and they shouldn't do that. But I'm okay with Larian doing it. Why is that okay? What do you think, Kerry?
Well, Microsoft has done it. I don't know if you know the game Grounded. Grounded is a game that was released. Yeah, I actually played that with my buddies when I first got Game Pass. Like I was exploring Game Pass, like what the hell is Game Pass? They had a bunch, so we were just like jumping into a bunch of multiplayer games, and it was a lot of fun as it was. But then I'm like, I'm doing a bunch of stuff, we were playing for like hours, I'm like, I haven't hit one achievement yet, what in the world is going on? So I go and it's like, there's no achievements because this is an early access game. I was like, what? Like what is that about? Grounded I think was like the first, or I don't know, it's the first that I encountered from Microsoft that was a first party game that was in early access. And I don't think Sea of Thieves qualified as an early access title, but that is a game that
felt like
launched. It felt like it because it was a game that was super raw, and I was shocked that so many people kept playing the game. Like years later, a buddy of mine was like, oh, we want to play Sea of Thieves with me? I'm like, you're playing Sea of Thieves? And we started playing it, and it was just more of that. But it was like, you're just going through, and I wish that there was like a compelling hook to actually play the game. But it's a very raw type of old style game that I enjoy. But there's like really cool stuff. I don't know if you played Sea of Thieves, but there's parts in it where you're like, you have the map and it's like take five paces, so you hold a button and you press up and you hear ka-chick, ka-chick, ka-chick. So you actually take paces in like north south and you start digging and stuff, and it nothing's really spelled out for you. There's no like breadcrumb trail, there's no like HUD elements that's like go to this X on here and just start digging. So it's really cool where Sea of Thieves came and went, and Microsoft probably has the most amount of a mix and match of early access games. And also probably the first that they're doing the AA games where they're taking smaller bites, like Pentiment. Pentiment was a game that would never have been greenlit by any publisher ever, and it's on Game Pass. And it's not for me, but I know a lot of people that love it.
Are we calling Hi-Fi Rush AA? That's a tangent.
I would probably say it's AA, but I loved – I haven't finished Hi-Fi Rush, but I mean the first two or three levels, I actually really enjoyed everything about the artistic style, how the game plays. I got to jump back into it, but I've been remiss on a lot of games as of late.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, I don't have an answer for that. You know, whether like AAA, doesn't that like depend on like how much you spent on it or something, right?
I think yeah. We've never had like a full definition, and now it's like the definition that I think a lot of us had in our mind was like $100 million budget. And
yeah.
Now that you can be firmly in sort of a what we traditionally thought as AA and have $100 million budget. So I think the budgets have ballooned, and we've talked, you know, everybody's talking about that, which is another hot take I've seen on there. So I won't get too far into it, but I think I would call Hi-Fi Rush AA. It's like not at the level of like graphical fidelity of like a Cyberpunk. Like it's at least a tier below, I would say, in terms of graphical fidelity, in terms of production values of something like Cyberpunk and, you know, the tent pole game. So that's where I would put it. I would put it in AA.
So you asked me the question, Rich. You said, how would I feel if Microsoft, Sony, and Nintendo had their first-party games coming out in early access? I'm curious, what do you think?
Yeah, so I think you're right. I think it definitely depends on what they're doing, right? Like, it would be so weird for Nintendo to release a Zelda and put in early access and, like, pretty much ruin any of the surprise element that they normally have for a Zelda game. But I think there are games certainly where I personally would be okay with them releasing it in early access and labeling it as such. So if they had maybe the next, I don't know, certainly like a Helldivers, right? Like something like that, something that's games as a service, maybe the next Marathon from Bungie, that sort of thing. If that was early access, I think I'd be cool with it. So it definitely depends on what they're doing.
You know, it's interesting when you said Zelda as an early access game, I think Tears of the Kingdom would probably be one of the only Zelda games that could ever work as an early access Zelda game. Mm-hmm. And that's largely to do with how fungible all of the puzzles were in terms of being able to solve them with just kind of any solution. Yeah. So I think that's what kind of, out of all of the Zeldas, Tears of the Kingdom would probably be the only that would be early accessible. Yeah. But it also goes to show that it's probably one of my least favorite Zelda games.
Kirby in chat said the next Mario Maker should be early access, and I love that idea. I adore that idea. Yeah. I think that's the other half of this, right? Like, gaming is changing, or game development is changing, and it's not just, this goes back to the game budgets being kind of getting bigger and bigger very quickly, but also there are a lot of experimental things that just become huge, right? Like Minecraft, Among Us. Like, it's, to me, it's not about putting a lot of money into a few number of games. To me, it's about putting a little money into a lot of games, seeing what blows up, and go off of that. If I was running a gaming company, that's how I would run it, right?
I don't think Nintendo runs that way, dude.
I'm not even just talking about Nintendo. I'm talking about all of them. Like,
right?
Even just the third party publishers. Nintendo, I feel like Nintendo is in their own lane. They know what they're doing, and they're doing it well. And I can't really complain about it. But when I look at like Ubisoft spending so much money on Skull and Bones, spending so much money on Assassin's Creed, I feel like they would be better off putting a little money in a lot of games, seeing what hits, and then doubling down on that investment.
I think that a lot of times what ends up happening when a company does something like that is, I mean, a company like Nintendo, I think that there's certain games that we never would have gotten. We would never have gotten a game like Pikmin or Animal Crossing if Nintendo was like kind of sprinkling things around just a little bit and then only like hitting the stuff that really works. I think that they would have been like, oh, well, in that case, let's let's make sure that like this Mario game is doing really well, but it's like the other games tend not to do nearly as much as the big tentpole releases. Animal Crossing was a terrible example. I shouldn't have brought it up because it came out during the pandemic when everybody was trapped in their house. But I don't think that kind of game gets made in that case.
I think Nintendo already does what I'm talking about. I think Nintendo spends money, a little bit of money, on a lot more different types of games. So they will try to make, like you said, an Animal Crossing back before they knew it was going to be successful. They will try it. They will try Pikmin. They will try a weird F-Zero game or try a weird Star Fox game. And if it doesn't hit, then maybe they don't come back to it for another 5 years, 6 years, 7 years. But if it does hit, then it's Animal Crossing and they have like one of the biggest hits they've ever had.
So the only thing I want to kind of put in here is that Nintendo has a wild horse type of, I don't know, pillar somewhere in their organization where there is some guy who has, I guess, ultimate say on everything, because it's like Super Mario Brothers 35, like Tetris 99, right. All of these games are like, oh, everyone loves those games. Get rid of them. They're no longer available. And like, you know, like as a method of using like any type of data from people playing games as to like, oh, we should do this better. There's that one dude who has like yes or no ability to like veto, like, nah, just throw it all away. That's no longer available. That was fun.
But you can get rid of it. We're done. Yeah, that was great, but we don't need it anymore. That's fine.
And it's gone.
I will Splatoon? Never forgive Nintendo for Super Mario 35. Never.
Yeah. Splatoon, though, we'll make three of those in 5 years. No big deal.
Yeah, it's really curious. I don't. So there's that weird component there. I think that they could do it, but then there's that one dude who's in that one part of the organization who is like, we need to make artificial scarcity this thing happen. And this guy is like the arbiter of that. I don't know if it would work.
Yeah, I'm not sure. Before we move on to the next hot take to respond to, Max Maloney has a really good point in chat. They said early access is fine if there is actual development, but some games release less than 100% and just stay that way. Now, he says Dead Space 2023. I don't know. I had an absolute blast with Dead Space 2023, but there are tons of games that launch in early access and then just stay in early access forever. Kind of like Gmail was in beta for what, like 12 years or some nonsense. I can't remember how long it was, but it just became a joke at that one point. So,
as much as I love boomer shooters are so guilty of like not abusing early access, but just you don't know what you're going to get. So like you can buy most boomer shooters are going to launch with like episode one and you'll have to wait to get episode two, three or whatever. And most of the time they're developed, but it just takes a while. So you don't know when that's coming. And then sometimes they don't sell well, so they just abandon it. Right. So it does, it's a lottery, but I guess that's what you get with being an early adopter, right? So it can be frustrating.
Yeah, and I think that what happens a lot of time is these companies, they do it with the best of intentions, but money is not infinite, and if something is not working, then they have to move on to something else. I would also say, like, a company, I can't remember the name of the company, but a game, an example that's like the day before that one, like I like that's definitely not so that's not this case. Like those guys, I feel like were scammers. I feel like they were scammers. I'm just trying to avoid getting sued.
Yeah, fair enough. Allegedly, they were scammers the whole way.
There we go. Allegedly.
That's and Amelia, don't say that. Don't say that. He says Graven and Wrath are never coming out, are they? These are two boomer shooter games that are, guilty, very guilty of this, which they're good games. And, you know, like you said, they come out with the best intentions. But yeah. And yeah, Emilio, it was allegedly just a scam.
All right. Like go ahead, Carrie.
Oh, sorry, real quick. I feel like there's a lot of Kickstarters that have been plagued by this type of feeling where everyone kind of funded early on and everyone was just, there was a lot of nostalgia-driven Kickstarter projects. There's a Space Quest game that was supposed to be done by the original two guys. They released this broken mess and they're still working on it. I got an update like at the end of January and I'm like, man, what are you guys? Like, I don't care anymore, but it's like, Yeah. It's a weird place that they're in where that money that was put into it is long gone. There's no new money coming into it. They still want to have something where it's worthwhile to release, and it's few and far between.
Do you feel like it's a hot take to say that that like Kickstarter is just an absolute nightmare for like buying stuff? Like, is that a hot take or is that a cold take? I refuse to buy anything on Kickstarter.
I think that's a cold take at this point. Like everyone, there was a bunch of people that were excited about this. Like you can get rid of the middleman. You don't need a venture capitalist. You don't need this. We can just do these things. But all the people that were involved in making these projects, they're not scammers by any means, but there is a lack of clear understanding of how long it's going to take and what you need to do to get something shipped. So there's creatives that are able to do stuff, but that there's like a whole part of that where there's like, you know, actual people that like know how to ship games and know how to schedule stuff that is actually needed. But there's a ton of projects that were on Kickstarter or whatever that got labeled as scams. And it's really just varying levels of incompetence that it didn't actually materialize.
I always like to say never attribute to malice when you can attribute to incompetence, because a lot of people out there are incompetent and it's not really their fault. They're trying as hard as they can and still they screw up. Just want to say real quick, thank you for the super chat that came in earlier. We'll respond to those super chats later on in the show, because I don't want to interrupt the conversation for that. Rich, did you find a hot take that you wanted to talk about?
I found a whole bunch. I'm going to pick the one that I think is the hottest and that I think I agree with the most. The Nintendo Switch is still a great handheld console. While some might scream how dated it is, it still runs the games built for it pretty well. That's from at Ace of Sterns. So there's a balance, right? And that's the thing. You asked for hot takes, so people are going to give you hot takes. But there is like a nuance to it, right? There's a spectrum to which at one end of the spectrum, you get the value of just having a single SKU, which is the Switch, that hasn't been upgraded since whenever it was released. And at the other end of the spectrum, you get the drawbacks of that, right? What are the fact that I can't have a new game that has high fidelity and the best graphics? And so we've probably passed the point where like the benefits outweigh the drawbacks. At the same time, I still think the Switch is great, and I'm looking forward to the 2022 Switch games, including Super Princess Peach and Mario versus Donkey Kong. I would still rather have a new Switch, but there's still a lot of good games coming. Not a lot. There are good games coming. I'll put it that way.
Well, what do you think about that, Kerry?
The Switch is still a very compelling handheld, no matter which way you look at it. And everyone dogs on the Switch for its image quality or whatever that it's doing. There are games that Nintendo does on their own system that image quality wise, what they're actually pushing out and visuals that they're producing are stellar. So anything that's coming from Nintendo, and arguably a lot of people are getting Switches just for their first party output, Nintendo is leagues ahead of both Microsoft and Sony in terms of first party output and games that you'd want to get on an exclusive platform. Insofar as, you know, PC Switch being a thing, but the Switch is thankfully so weak that emulation is feasible on a lot of low power devices, which is kind of funny, because it's, the irony of it is that Nintendo has long left the hardware end of the game where they're pushing for hardware. And the end result, the net result of that is that it's been easier to emulate their systems because they're so low powered, which I'm thankful for. And because it's such a popular system, you look at like Red Dead Redemption, which finally came out to Switch. That is the best way to play Red Dead Redemption emulation wise, out of any particular either RPCS3 or Xenia. The Switch version plays very, very well and looks really good. So, yeah, I mean, I love the Switch. The Switch flash cart that's coming out, I think whatever team did that kind of did it a little too soon. They should have totally waited until the Super Nintendo Switch was coming out, because if now Nintendo has enough time where they could have, I guess, have enough time where they can try to figure out how to break the compatibility on the new Switch, because I'm still of the mind that Nintendo is not insane enough to like, you know what, everyone that invested in the Switch library, who cares, let's re-roll this. I don't think that Nintendo would do that. Like, I know Nintendo can do a lot of nutso crazy things. Yeah. I just wouldn't bet that they would do it. But now that this flash card has been announced, I think that Nintendo themselves are like, oh, crap. So now they have to, like, you know, bake in some more security in the Super Switch one. They probably were already doing that anyway. But, you know, it's always the cat and mouse game. And I think that the team that was releasing that should have waited until that came out. So they'd be like, hey, we have a flash cart that works on the Super Switch. And they're like, ooh, you got us. You waited 8 years. But yeah, I my son is like dying to get a Super Switch. I told him about midnight launches. So he's like stoked. He's been saving his money to buy his own Super Switch. And he wants to do a midnight launch. He wants to go to GameStop or Best Buy and wait in line and get it. But yeah, I think that if we were to take a look at this holistically, I think right now is a defining moment for a lot of different handhelds. You look at the Steam Deck and you look at Switch and Super Switch. The Super Switch, if it comes out this year, is going to solidify and cement where people are buying their digital library on these handhelds. And I think that there's a number of people that aren't really fully investing in the Switch just because ecosystem-wise, it's not the best visuals. And Steam Deck has kind of messed that up a little bit. Going in that direction, I think that, you know, with the rumors that Microsoft is actually going to have a Zen 5 RDNA 4, you know, mid-gen refresh, that's actually a bit beefier than just pushing more cores. I think I'll say this in the end of the time. I think Microsoft needs to get a handheld out there, especially with Game Pass and all the other stuff, to, if they don't have something for the Super Switch to compete against, the race is going to be gone. The Super Switch is going to take it all the way, and then people are going to be so invested in the Super Switch side of stuff that it's really only going to be like PC handhelds and the Switch, really, insofar as a handheld scope.
Well, I mean, I don't know. We'll see. Microsoft doesn't seem to really care about the hardware side of things very much. They really seem to want to just make Game Pass. And
yeah,
I think they'll be perfectly fine there if they continue to do that. I think I like that all of the different console makers are doing different things. But back to the hot take, is the Switch a decent handheld still? Absolutely. Yes. It's still really uncomfortable to play in handheld mode. I've never liked playing it in handheld mode. 99% of the time when I play that thing, it is docked. But as far as like the game quality for the games that are on that system, they're fantastic games if they're first party. We run into a lot of issues for third party ports from some companies. I don't want to say, I don't like the idea of saying that the devs are lazy, but you know, they get X number of dollars and you can only do so much with X number of dollars and then you have to ship your game.
Yep.
And the publishers are like, well, you know, you guys are shipping this game to the Nintendo Switch because that's your job. So do it. And they get as far as they can. And then it's like, okay, we're going to ship it. And it's kind of broken, kind of like the Batman game that was mentioned before. Like they ship a broken mess to the Nintendo Switch.
That's surprising. Like
back when I did a Nintendo podcast, I used to say that Nintendo used to like third-party stuff, they ruled that with an iron fist, and they said, you're not shipping unless we approve it. And, like, that's a game that should never have gotten through the approval process to end up on the Switch. So I do think it's still a good system if you want to play mostly, like, indie stuff and Nintendo first-party stuff. But the big games that are on all of the platforms, it's almost always like a bad experience with those particular games.
Real quick for handheld play, do you have a Nitro Deck? Do either of you have one?
I do.
I don't. Do you? You said you do, Carrie?
Mm-hmm.
I like it. What do you think, Carrie?
I'm not a big fan of it. It's kind of like an all-or-nothing solution, and I've never been that big into strapping... it just makes it larger, and I don't really care about the ergonomics of the Switch so much. The Switch, for what it's worth, I never got hand cramps in using it in handheld mode. I know that's different for other people, but the PS Vita and the 3DS both gave me cramps when I was playing on it. So it's odd for me that the Switch itself never really gave me a problem. So because of that, because of how I'm holding it and it's not uncomfortable, it's never been a thing that I've looked to solve.
Yeah. So I did have hand cramps with the Switch playing handheld. Somehow I beat Celeste on the Switch, and looking back on it, I have no idea how I did that, because I did it mostly in handheld mode, so I didn't have a D-pad and my hands were getting cramps. but I really like the Nitro deck. I think it's super comfortable, and it makes the Switch playable in handheld mode to me again. So, Bill, if you, well, you know, we're already up to the Super Switch, hopefully this year, 2024. But if for some reason you want to play the Switch handheld, Nitro deck is pretty good.
Nitro deck shot themselves in the foot by not putting that thing out like 5 years ago.
You say that, but they seem to have been really successful. So there's that too.
Maybe. I just can't see, like, 5 years ago, holy cow, these things would have been flying off the shelves. Yeah. But you ship it today, and a lot of people like myself are like, well, this, as Carrie calls it, the Super Switch is coming. Do we really want to spend more money on my Nintendo Switch if I'm suddenly not going to be using it? It's really a valid thing.
It is a thing that Nintendo really has to get ahead of, because my son has been on probably waiting for a Super Switch for 2 years now. And I feel like a lot of people have been in that same mind space, Bill, is that they're of the mind like, well, it's going to come out. It's right around the corner. So I'm not going to do anything. And that's a thing that they really have to just nip in the bud by releasing it already.
Yeah, I ran a poll in chat. I said, do you think that the Super Switch, as Carrie calls it, is coming this year? Only 55% said yes. 44% said no. That's crazy to me that it's, I thought it would be 70% yes, 30% no. That's way closer than I anticipated it to be. Chris, did you call it Super Switch? Is saying, I did call it Super Switch. Chris Stamp is saying, is Super Switch the same as the Switch 2? Yeah, we don't know what it's called. We're just saying, you know, that is, in my opinion, the best name for the next Switch is the Super Nintendo Switch, because we have the Super Nintendo, you know? But we'll see. We'll see what happens. I think they got to really. Carrie, you think it's coming this year?
They have to. If they don't come out this year, it's a big mistake.
Rich?
Ditto.
Okay. So there you have it. We're 100%. This panel is 100% that it's coming out this year. So you guys can bank on it. Carrie, did you find a hot take that you wanted to talk about?
No, I didn't. I've been working on another video that I have to finish by today.
We'll never forgive you. But that's okay, because Rich brought more than one. Rich, you got one more?
I brought plenty. I don't know which one to pick, but I'm going to go with the one that maybe best mirrors the conversation that Carrie and I have had in chat for a while, for the last 2 weeks. So Antonio Cunningham said, subscription-based gaming is a cancer to the game industry. It's taken away what little ownership we have. It's crazy that we depend on piracy to save us from the you'll own nothing crowd. So there are a lot of layers to that, and one of those layers is like, is piracy justified? Which is a whole other hot take from Sir Pantelot. I'm not going to read it here right now, but there was that hot take as well, right? Like whether or not piracy is justified. And there, I can repeat a lot of things that we've heard, right? Like, for example, is it, if you don't own anything, then piracy is not, if you don't own it, then piracy is not stealing. Is that the one?
Yeah. I mean, we've all heard that a million times. Yeah. It's a compelling argument. I'm not advocating for piracy, but that is a very compelling argument, especially when you see things just get the rug pulled out from people who bought stuff. And like, what was it? It was on Sony recently, all the both people who bought a Discovery TV show on the Sony PlayStation had it just stolen from them.
Yeah.
Like, so that Sony is a perfect example. Go ahead. Sorry.
So Sony walked that back, sort of. They just renewed a contract, right? So like, it just means that you have that content for a little bit longer now. I think it's two or three more years.
Well, it's already poisoned.
Exactly. Yeah. The well is already poisoned. But to the take, I don't know where I land yet. I know the conversations that Carrie and I have had are me closer to being subscription-based gaming is a cancer, but I don't actually call it a cancer. I think it's really the next sentence that he says, it's taken away what little ownership we have, right? That's the crux, is what is our ownership? And I think my hot take is that we should be leveraging our power in our communities, whatever that is, right, to advocate for regulation. I think regulation can actually help what problems we may have with ownership. So I think it would be cool if we advocated for like better digital ownership rights, where it wasn't just a license and we had some sort of ways to back up our ownership, even when the service does go away. I would pay extra money for that, right? Like I would pay extra money to have my Steam licenses or my whatever I buy, right? Have these licenses not just be licenses for the lifetime of the system, but be for the lifetime, for my lifetime. I own these forever, indefinitely. However, we would make that happen. And I think regulation would be a good way to getting there.
Yeah. Or the threat of regulation. You go back right to the Super Nintendo and Sega Genesis era, or Sega CD era, when we had Night Trap and Mortal Kombat, like putting everybody in a tizzy. Sega went to Nintendo and said, hey, do you want to work together and make they didn't call it the ESRB, they called it something else. And Nintendo said, right, get out of here. We don't have to worry about that stuff on our system. You guys, you go fight it on your own. And then, you know, Congress stepped in and they pulled all the big players in the industry up in front of what the hell do they call it, where they ask all the questions? A hearing, yeah. They pulled them all up in front of them and had a hearing. And shortly thereafter, everybody said, hey, let's make the ESRB in order to avoid having the government make us do something that we don't want to do. So,
right,
like, that's the kind of thing that I think I don't like the idea of, you know, somebody regulating the gaming industry to make them do something, but I like them to do it because otherwise maybe that will happen.
I feel like that's a very like American thing where like we don't like it, but we still like look to the W's that the EU brings us and are like, absolutely, yes, this is awesome. And so like, we do like regulation. We just like when other people do it apparently, and it benefits us. Like, yeah, USB-C, great. We want that. And the only reason we have it is because of EU regulation, but we didn't want to do it ourselves for some reason.
Yeah. I definitely there with you. I just feel like I prefer that the people who make these decisions be people who know stuff. And far too often the people who, like, when regulators get in the mix, there's a bunch of people trying to make decisions that don't know jack about jack. You know, you get some moron saying it's a series, the internet's a series of tubes, you know, everybody remembers that meme that we all joked about for years, because you get these out of touch people that don't understand things. And that makes for some very bad regulation to happen. But I do want to be able to own the games that I have. Although there's I'm going to poke one hole in your thread there. And that's going to be, what about the games that require a server?
If you're an athlete, you know, the greatest motivator of all is the fear of letting your teammates down. After all, a team is only as good as its weakest link. So you owe it to those wearing the same jersey as you to be your best every time you step on the field. That's why there's no vape in team. When you vape, you can expose your lungs to toxic chemicals that can damage your lungs. If you're a step behind, the team's a step behind. Brought to you by The Real Cost and the FDA.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code Spotify for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
What do you mean? So, you mean online games?
Yeah, like an online game where, you know, you're playing this game. Like, I'll give you an example, Marvel Heroes, which was basically a Diablo game where you could play as Spider-Man or Cyclops or Wolverine or whatever. And it was awesome. It was really, really good. And then Disney bought Marvel, and then they shut that game down And it was an online-only Diablo game featuring Marvel characters. They shut that server down, and nobody could play anymore. Yeah. It's just gone.
Yeah. What were you going to say, Kerry?
Yeah, so there are a number of things. I'm actually quite invested in this particular conversation. So there's a lot of emulated servers that people make as a last-ditch effort. And a lot of the emulated servers start while the game is still going, which presents a problem, right? Like, you don't want that to happen, because then you could have a forked server where everyone's going to and they don't need to pay a subscription, or they're going to pay a subscription to the other guy that's running your thing.
Right.
I think that there should be a law and regulation that says any server-based thing needs to have some method. And this is like a Web 3.0 kind of idea that we're talking about, like IPFS, where you're talking about a global file system type of thing, a global standardized server that runs these types of games, or just whatever, that they have to be available, made available. If the game is canceled and goes down, that any server functionality, all that stack, has to be made available to people to recreate on their own. That is a thing that should totally happen, because right now we only have the concerted effort of individuals that are doing this. And this is like the only way that we can actually play some of these older games. One of the first MMOs that I loved playing was The Realm by Sierra Online. And it was like a mix and match of their point and click type of games, but in an MMO. And it was amazing. It was a lot of fun. And that I have an emulated version of that. So I have the emulated server that I can run in my own network, and people can connect to my own Realm server that people can play on. But that is like a super underground thing that not a lot of people know about. EverQuest has it. So there's bigger games that have this type of stuff, but like, it totally should be available. I'm a big, big fan of that needing to be like a blunt regulation type of thing. If like, I'm cool with saying don't release it to the public if it's running, but if it's like gone, it must be released. Like, there's no exceptions to that. I'm like a staunch supporter of that.
Yeah, I agree with that 100%, especially, but, you know, EverQuest is still around.
Yes.
And Project 99 exists. You know, so like that's a very gray area. But a game like Wildstar, like I was talking about Wildstar with a friend recently, and we were like, it's an MMO. They made huge mistakes. It was a fantastic game, but they made huge mistakes in their marketing and totally marketed it to the wrong people. And then that game got shut down, and now nobody can play it.
Yeah, I agree. So there's I don't know what company it is, like Red something. They took over a lot of Sony's stuff, MMOs. So PlanetSide, EverQuest 2, EverQuest 1. They took over. So they bought everything from Sony and just like ran it themselves. So they actually continue to make EverQuest. So like, if you go to EverQuest.com, there are new expansions to EverQuest made by this company, and people are supporting it. So that is like a weird avenue of people and companies collectively taking that upon themselves to like do that whole effort. I don't think that that's like, I think that's an exception to the rule, in that if there is ever an event where there is no buyer, there is no person that is going to take over the thing, it should not be allowed to just evaporate into the digital ether. That is something I'm wholly against. I'm glad that there's a bunch of people that are making emulated stuff, but it's so underground and like a hodgepodge of stuff that it requires a technically savvy person to erect. Daybreak Games, there you go.
Yeah, there were the ones. I'll let you go in just a second, Rich. Daybreak Games is the studio that he was talking about, but they're also the ones that were originally the people who made EverQuest, and then Sony bought them, and then they ended up buying it back from Sony. It's a weird thing. Go ahead, Rich. What were you saying?
I just wanted to shout out Knockout City, which was a pretty good game, right? Like a games as a service game. And that was one that got shut down in June of last year. It's now last year. And they ended up doing a private hosted server. They made that available for free. So that's an example of a game that can still be played today. I don't know if it is. I assume there's a community of people playing that. With this private hosted server that the Knockout City development team developed before they shut down the servers. So that's really, really neat.
Yeah, we had, oh gosh, who it was, Call Me Jay said something about every game, I wish I could find it, every game that has a server, any server-based game needs an offline mode or a system that emulates the server instructions locally. I don't necessarily agree with that. If you're talking about just like regular multiplayer, yeah, but when you're talking about something like an MMO, that's really not something that's going to work that way. And having like World of Warcraft have an offline mode, it just doesn't make any sense. But I do like Carrie's idea of having the, you know, the software that is needed in order to run the server available just as open source. If you shut the game down, just make the stuff open source. All right. Anything else that you guys want to hit on this this hot take before we move on?
Yeah. You know, it's a hot take. The weird thing about this is that we're coming full circle on an idea that Microsoft tried doing with the original Xbox One in 2013, where they were like, you buy a disc and it'll just make you have the digital version. And then you can, you know, sell and do whatever you want with that digital game, and you can have family sharing and all this other stuff. But the physical version you're going to get is just going to translate to an immediate digital version. And everyone was like, go F yourself. And now we're coming full circle where Microsoft was trying to self-regulate. And now everyone's looking at the stuff and it's like, hey, we demand to own this stuff. And,
let's be real. No one trusted Microsoft. That's the crux, right?
I totally get it. And I'm trying to like look up the term for it and I can't find it. There's a term that has been coined for Microsoft, and it's Microsoft is in their own little bubble. So there are things that they have developed on the desktop and other things where they like made 9 CRTs and they're like, look how cool this is. Like you can have 9 CRTs to have like this full desktop around you. It's like, no one is going to do this. Why did you make this? And there's like a sphere. It's something that they call where, you know, Microsoft employees are just like have tunnel vision of like what they're experiencing that no other person is normally going to witness. And I feel like that whole thing, that push that Microsoft was doing, was a big hodgepodge of that whole mess where the Xbox 360 was hot. You had a bunch of people that were, for whatever reason, everyone was hot on TV. Like TV was like, oh, that's going to be a thing that a lot of people are doing. Well, AT&T bought DirecTV and that was a huge mess. Set-top
box, right?
Yeah, like you can see it clearly, and you saw it clearly with crypto. When all of these companies all of a sudden just started jumping on crypto as like it was like, oh, we got to jump on this bandwagon. And it's like all of these different companies like announced it at a similar time. And I feel like TV was like that thing as well. So you had like Microsoft, AT&T, and all these other people that like CEOs, which is so CEOs are talking amongst other CEOs and like, let's go join in on TV. And Microsoft and AT&T ate it hard, real bad on that choice from those CEOs. And likewise for crypto, Square Enix is still going down that route for whatever reason. But like, it was a weird thing to witness where everyone was already peeling away from crypto and you know, these companies were still trying to do it. And I don't know. I find that like we're in a situation where we're seeing everyone wants to own what they have. They have this feeling like they bought it, they own it, but they don't. They just have a license to it. And I feel like, as like we were all saying, that the EU is probably going to step in here and they're like, no, they do own it. Also, they need to be able to sell whatever license they bought. So there's going to have to be an ecosystem somewhere inside of these platforms where you can resell your stuff. And I think Apple's going to find themselves getting bit in the ass real hard because they have a bunch of games that no longer function or work on the latest versions of iOS. So
yeah, they're the worst of this, right? Like when it comes to preservation, when it comes to like the stuff that Tim Sweeney is fighting against, that sort of stuff. Carrie, who was the name of the executive that was like Phil Spencer's predecessor at Microsoft?
Peter Moore?
I think it was the guy after
Peter Moore. Oh, yeah, it was the guy after. Oh,
the Xbox
Don
Matrick. Guy.
Don Matrick.
Don Matrick. See, that guy, he's probably great as a person. I don't know. But as far as Xbox executives go, he was the worst, right?
Yeah, and like, that was a Yeah, like that was, you know, there's that whole like collusion that you see, that you can almost see through the veil of like what's going on. Electronic Arts and Microsoft were super buddy buddy, and mm-hmm. Sega and Microsoft were super buddy buddy, and you know, like they were buddy buddy with Sega like during the Dreamcast era. Like Dreamcast right. had the Windows of some version kernel of running on Dreamcast. And then Peter Moore, who was a part of Sega, is now taking over Xbox. And then you see like a relationship with Electronic Arts. And then Don Matrick from EA comes over to Microsoft. And it's like, well, what the hell's going on there, guys? But yeah, it's like Peter Moore was great for Xbox. Don Matrick wasn't. And that whole thing is whatever. It's unfortunate. Yeah. But
I bring it up because it goes back to what you were saying, right? Like when Microsoft made that plan, or that they were trying to advertise that plan, right? It was during Don Matrick's time. And, you know, if Phil Spencer said something like that today, like, we love Phil. Like, Phil, like, okay, cool. That's great. We'll see how you ride this out and how you make that happen. But Don Matrick had earned zero of that trust. And there was no way that I would have believed that he would have done that in a way that would have been pro-consumer.
Yeah, that's fair. Yeah. The whole Xbox One thing was a giant mess anyway. So it's just weird to me, right? Like they were at least trying to secure and understand and try to bypass that regulation. Cause they're looking 10 years down the road, right? Well, we're only doing licenses and that people are going to be fed up with that and they don't want this and that. So it's like they were trying to make an ecosystem, a digital ecosystem that worked like physical. And everyone's like, go F yourself. And now we're very much in that space, literally 10 years later. Well now 11 years. It's interesting to witness.
Yeah, I feel like, you know, the idea of digital ownership, I don't know that that's ever going to happen. Even with regulation, I think that there's too many hurdles to jump over and make sure that everything is interoperable. Because, you know, this company is going to use this format for their stuff. These guys are going to do their own thing. These guys are going to do their own thing. And it's just, it's never going to really work the way that we want it to. But, you know, I love the discussion and the idea of, I did a poll in chat and I said, are subscriptions bad for the industry? And it was 66% said yes, 34% said no. So most people do think that subscriptions are bad for the industry. I don't know how I feel about it because I freaking love Game Pass. Like I subscribe to it and I get to play tons of games that I otherwise would not play. And to me, personally, that is good for me. But is it bad for the industry? I don't know. And if you guys who are watching this or were in our little private Discord, you would constantly see this argument happening between everybody in there as we talk about it back and forth. And every time we start having this conversation, I'm just like, man, I wish we were recording this because it was really good. Well, now we got to have that.
Glad to make it happen.
Yeah, I appreciate it.
All right. Real quick, Bob, I didn't know you put that poll up. Bobby Bracken's to say, can you be more specific about subscription? And I will say, like, if I had voted in that poll, I'd probably say that that subscriptions are generally bad for the industry. But again, there is nuance, right? Like I love Humble Choice. I have subscribed to Game Pass in the past. Humble Choice, I think unequivocally is a good subscription because you can pause it, you can cancel it, and you can sign back up later on.
To do that.
What's that?
I never remember to do that.
I literally have a reminder in my phone that reminds me once a month to check the Humble Choice and pause it. But the truth is, if I don't pause it, like I have, there's this goodwill that they've bought up with me that like if I mistakenly forget to unpause it or pause it rather, then no big deal. They just got another $12 for me. But I guess with Game Pass specifically, I'll just close on saying, I think people have said Game Pass is the greatest deal in gaming right now. They're not wrong. It's a really great deal in gaming. There's no doubt. I think the question is, what will it be in the future? And my concern is just that they're building a fence around you now and getting you to opt in now. And they're going to, you know, pull the rug out from under you in 10 years from now, 15 years from now. And I can't tell the future, so that may not happen, but I can, I can see the past, and we've seen what has happened with Netflix and other subscriptions and other just tech bubble things that mm-hmm. feel like the rug has been pulled out from under me personally.
So I just last night, my wife and I, we like to watch Twilight Zone on there used to be a marathon back when we had cable. They would do a marathon on New Year's Eve, and we would watch the Twilight Zone like all damn night. It was just this this tradition. And then eventually we became cord cutters. And last night she found it on Amazon. Now, Amazon recently changed their, I know this isn't gaming related, but this is directly related to what Rich was saying, everybody. They said, hey, we're going to start putting ads on Amazon Prime videos, and you can pay an extra $2 a month or whatever to get rid of that. Again, you know, the price is completely outside of this. Just the idea that I had already signed up and they changed it for me drives me crazy, number one. Number two, there were ads in it last night. It's not supposed to start until January 29th. Right. But there were ads in my Twilight Zone episodes last night, and there was no way for me to bump my subscription up so that I didn't have to watch these ridiculously annoying ads. That was incredibly frustrating to me. And this is the kind of thing where I feel like, you know, the streaming services, the video game subscriptions, all of those things, I said earlier, I don't want regulation, but all of those things I want regulated so that when I sign up for a damn service, they can't change the price on me. They can change the price on the next doofus that hasn't signed up yet. But when I sign up, if I sign up at $10, it's $10 until I decide to cancel my service. And then if I renew, that price goes back up. Go ahead.
So there's a few things. Make sure, number one, that because Amazon introduced Freevee, which had ads last year. Make sure it doesn't say Freevee on it. If it says Prime, that should not have ads. If it says Freevee, that would have ads.
I did not know about that.
Yeah, so they're kind of like demoing this thing. For what it's worth, I find it funny because I feel like Amazon Prime, which I have been subscribed to, and I'm like, you know, maybe I don't need Prime anymore because pretty much everything I order is going to get to me in 2 days anyway, just because the infrastructure has been built up in such a way that it's almost impossible not to get it in 2 days. It's more of a problem for them to not ship it, not deliver it to me in 2 days. I got something from Best Buy and it got to me in a day, and I got it for free, and I'm not a part of anything. So it feels like UPS and all these other things are just like so well oiled now that it's just a result of Prime-ness. And you look at what Amazon has done with Prime and the video part of it, they've really been banging on all cylinders. This year, we have Boys Season 4. We have the Fallout series, which is now going to be canon, part of the Fallout universe. And I was sweet, I can't wait to watch this. And then they were like, there's going to be ads. And I was like, oh, you guys know it's good. I feel like they're like, there's someone working in the background that's like, you know, we have all these books and no one's really making like real adaptations of books. Let's just do it good. And Amazon has been banging on all cylinders. And the problem when you look at Netflix is the only real subscription service that has been video good. And everyone else joined in and like, oh, we can just do it. And it turns out that it's very expensive to do what Netflix is doing. And everyone is like, oh, crap, this is a lot harder than it actually is. And now they're starting to peel back or increase the subscription fees just to come back. And everyone's like, man, I really wish I had cable again. It's a weird thing. So when you look at this and go back to what Game Pass is, I only started playing back on Xbox again because of Game Pass. I would argue that if Microsoft did not make Game Pass, they would cease to be. Like, if Game Pass didn't exist for Xbox, it's likely that they would have just vanished. And it would just be Nintendo and Sony again. I think Game Pass is the only reason that Microsoft is still in it. So from that angle, are subscriptions bad? I tend to look at it through the lens of Grounded, Sea of Thieves, Pentiment. We would not have Hi-Fi Rush. We would definitely not have gotten these games unless that subscription was there. And Microsoft, with Phil Spencer, kind of like saying, okay, let's have these AA games, which I think is the right way to look at it. I don't need 40-hour single-player games. I want an 8-hour, 6-hour single-player game. And I think just looking at it through that scope is something that a lot of companies need to start doing. But I'm on the pro side of subscription models. I don't think that every company can do it. And I think Microsoft is the only one where they said day one, any brand new game comes into Game Pass. And I think that's a core part of that. And no other company can do it. It's a weird mix and match. Like when we took a look at the stuff that came out. But yeah, subscription models are tough. I like them, and I don't think every company can succeed at them. So it's kind of a give and take.
So if number one, one thing I want to push back on is that whole idea that Microsoft is like day one. It's not day one. That is BS, because when certain games come out and you got to pay in order to get access on day one, man, screw you, Microsoft. I can't think of what game it is Starfield. Off the top of my head. Starfield was one of them. Yeah. Forza was another one where you only had to play on day one if you bought it. And then they were like, oh, well, you're buying early access, which is
that's a premium
horse
version.
Hockey.
Yeah, you're buying the premium version to play 6 days or 7 days early, which is BS. That is a whole bunch of BS. Diablo 4 did it too, didn't they? Diablo 4?
Well, Diablo 4 is not on Game Pass.
Right, but I'm saying there's other games that have been doing, like, let's just put it in the premium version of the game where you can play seven days early.
I don't think that necessarily bothers me nearly as much as Microsoft saying day one access for your Game Pass games, right?
Yeah.
But then you got to pay to get the real day one. And they're like, well, that's not day one.
Yeah, but Starfield was only available day one with the premium version. You can only get on day one with the $100 version or $90 version or whatever.
Right. What I'm saying is Diablo, that doesn't count for Diablo because that's not a Game Pass thing. Like Blizzard isn't part of the subscription. So they didn't.
At the time. Certainly
it still isn't yet, but I can't see a world in which the Blizzard games aren't all going to be on Game Pass. Speaking of Game Pass, we had a message that come in from Sancho, a super chat. Thank you very much for the support. If you guys want to make sure that we see your messages, that's one way to do it. But they said, how do you guys personally play Game Pass games? I'm Xbox. I'll just play it on my Xbox. I don't really play it on my PC all that much because my PC is older and weaker. Rich?
So I haven't subscribed to Game Pass in a while. The last time I subscribed to Game Pass, I think, was pre-Steam Deck, when I was using the GPD WinMax 1, and I was using Game Pass on that. So I was, playing on the GPD WinMax 1. I played Eichenfell through that and a couple other indies, but it was fun.
Now, how are you playing Game Pass, Carrie?
Actually, this is actually a good thing. So this weekend, the weekend, starting Friday, I was playing on my Xbox Series X. I was like, you know what? I'm going to play Starfield. I wasn't really feeling it, but let me just go through it. It wasn't the game that everyone wanted it to be, and it's still a fun game, and there's still some parts of it that are amazing to play. So I played on my Xbox Series X, and then I had my GPD Win Mini, and my daughter and my wife started watching some rom-coms on Netflix. So I just opened up my GPD Win Mini and synced the save automatically, and I started playing on my GPD Win Mini. And then I was like, you know what? There was Game Pass that came to the MetaQuest. So I got the MetaQuest 2 that my son no longer uses because he has the MetaQuest 3. So I put on my MetaQuest 2, and I started playing MetaQuest 3 with Game Pass cloud streaming. And I had to wait 15 minutes before I could play. It was like, there's a long queue of people playing on xCloud. I'm like, what the hell is this? This has never been a thing. And I guess a lot of people are playing on xCloud now because I had to wait 15. I literally had to just take my headset off and wait until I heard Starfield playing through my headset. I was like, oh, okay, let me do this. And I put it on, and it said, your game data didn't sync. Would you like to retry? I'm like, what? So then I opened up my GPD Win Mini. I'm trying to open up the Xbox app, and there is no button on the Xbox app for PC to say force sync my saves. And there's nothing I could see. So I'm like, oh, let me play it. And it's like, you're playing on cloud. Do you want to terminate that? I'm like, what? Like, how do I put the saves on this thing onto there? And that was like the one part where I've actually had a mess. So I actually got a survey data from Xbox PC Game Pass. And I was like, there needs to be a way for me to force sync my save data and also see it. Like, I am oblivious to what is going on, and I'm all for transparency, but when it's breaking, there needs to be a button. There needs to be a way that I could say, no, go and push it now. Go do whatever. It was a little rocky there. That's like one time that, but I'm grateful because it didn't just like play and then like go back to like a previous section. And then I would have played like a previous game and then that would have gotten re-uploaded. And then that would have been a nightmare. So at the very least, I'm glad that there's like a catch on Microsoft's side where they're like, oh wait, we don't have the last update. But they need the PC side of it needs to get fixed a bunch.
This episode is brought to you by Reese's Peanut Butter Cups. In breaking news, leading scientists worldwide are conducting experiments to determine if Reese's Peanut Butter Cups are the perfect combination of peanut butter and chocolate. However, it appears the study was inconclusive, as the scientists couldn't help but eat all the Reese's. Because when you want something sweet, you can't do better than Reese's. Find Reese's now at a store near you.
Yeah, I think so, too. Let us know in chat how it is that you guys play your Game Pass games, if you subscribe to Game Pass at all. I also asked the guys to bring three games that, and we don't have to spend too much time on this, but I wanted to hear three games that they are looking forward to in 2024. So I'm going to start us off with my first game, and these are not in any particular order. But the first game that I have as my most anticipated game for 2024 might come out that year or not, because we don't actually have the month. But Star Wars Outlaws, that demo that they showed where like they were playing. I mean, I know it's a demo and you know, take all that stuff with a grain of salt, but that game looks fantastic. And it's
in badass.
It's in the Star Wars universe, which I love Star Wars. I adore Star Wars. So I'm sold. I'm gonna buy that game day one. That is one of my most anticipated games. Rich, what's one of your most anticipated games for the new year?
I thought I was gonna go last because I got like a ton, but if I'm gonna pick one, the top one I think is Hellblade 2, because of the games that I'm looking at, Hellblade is one that I finished, I really enjoyed, and it was something different, and to an extent I am worried that like Hellblade 2 won't be different enough. One of the reasons I really like Hellblade is because of how different it was. But I'm really interested to see where they take it. I'm really interested to see, you know, the studio now has more money, more trust within Microsoft, now being within Microsoft. And I like to see what they do with the sequel.
What about you, Carrie? What's one of your most anticipated games for next year?
So the game that I'm looking forward to, and I've been looking forward to this since they had the teaser trailer for this in 2020, is Avowed, and this is the Skyrim like made by Obsidian, and that I've been looking forward to that for a while. The trailer for it wasn't all that great, but I'm looking forward to see what Obsidian does in that type of style. That's probably a thing that I've been waiting for a while, and I know that that's coming out this year.
Awesome. So my next one, because I picked three. I just thought of one just off the top of my head. I'm going to use this as a dark horse because we don't really know if it's coming this year or not. Metroid Prime 4.
Oh, yeah.
You know, you rewind to the release of the Switch 7 years ago, 8 years ago. I don't know, 2016. Like,
I still have my pre-order on Best Buy, I think.
So Nintendo had zero choice. They had to announce Metroid Prime 4 because they just released Metroid Samus Returns on the 3DS, right? And they released it the same year that the Nintendo Switch came out. So they were like, it kind of put them in a position where they had to announce a Metroid game coming to Switch in order to help the Switch move sales, you know, because it came out in March. In June, they're making these announcements, and they're like, here's Metroid Samus Returns for the 3DS. Oh, by the way, we're also making a Nintendo Switch Metroid game, so don't worry, everybody, all right? And then they had to start over. They got to a certain point, and Nintendo was like, hey, our game sucks, so we're starting over. We're getting the studio that made the other Metroid games to make that. And we haven't heard anything since. Like, it's been nothing. And I want to play Metroid Prime 4 so badly. So that's going to be one of my picks, because I just love the Metroid series. Rich, what's next on your list of most anticipated games?
We got to go with Final Fantasy VII Rebirth. That's the next one, I would say. I want to see where they take it again. And I think it'll be a good one.
Miko in chat says Prime 4 will be a launch title for the next Switch. I hope that it's on the current Switch and the next Switch, like they did with the Wii U and the Switch for Breath of the Wild. I think that would be a really great move. When does Final Fantasy VII Rebirth come out? Because I still need to finish Remake, and so, I bought it twice already, damn it.
February, I think, but I have the same problem because I got through it like two-thirds of the way on the PS4, and then I bought the PC version. Well, I got the upgrade for the PS5, and I was going to play on that, and then I got the PC version. So mm-hmm. I have to finish that as well. The problem is, I think Dragon's Dogma 2 also comes out in February, and I've never played Dragon's Dogma, so now I have to make the decision, do I go back and play the first one, or do I just get the second one? So, yeah, that's too much gaming to finish in 1.5 months, I think.
While Kerry tells us about his next most anticipated game, I'm going to run a poll in chat to see what you guys think. Final Fantasy VII or Remake or Rebirth or Dragon's Dogma 2, since they both come out at the same time. So let me get that poll up. Kerry, what's your next most anticipated game? Or are you busy typing?
No, I was looking for my Best Buy order. It was 2018 that I bought
Metro Best Buy's been collecting on that float.
And then I rebought it in 2018 or 2019, basically when GCU, Gamer Club Unlocked or whatever, Best Buy's program that they had where you can get 20% off on new games and stuff. So I'm looking, and I still have it somewhere, but I can't find it on Best Buy anywhere. But it was $36 that I paid for Metroid Prime 4. That's what it's going to come to me at. So I bought it a long time ago. But yeah, I am of the belief that it should be a launch title for the Super Switch, because we don't have, it's like a nebulous amount of time of that, how long they've been working on it. And, you know, we know that it's been scrapped and rebooted and whatever. I think they need a proper launch title, much like how Breath of the Wild was on the Wii U and the Switch. And, you know, Metroid has never been a system seller.
That's
I
still the think thing.
They need something.
I'm sure that the Super Switch will have, I feel like they're going to have the same run that the Switch did in year one, where they will have a pretty good game like almost every month. So I do imagine that Metroid Prime 4 will be part of that strategy. But I think it would be a mistake for that to be the tentpole launch game. Mm. I think it's Mario Kart 9. I think that's going to be. I think that's going to be by far the launch game.
Yeah, that's probably a better bet. But that's going to be a game that. Well, you know, it's a good point, because you know, we look at Mario Kart 8 and it looks fantastic on the Switch, runs perfectly great on the Switch. So chances are that there's going to whatever Mario Kart 9 is. But they just came out with another wave of DLC for Mario Kart 8, and I guess
the last one. Yep. Yeah, and that was a Wii U game.
Yeah. Well, you know, for what it's worth, there was a lot of people that didn't buy a Wii U, so Nintendo just still has this treasure trove of like stuff that they could just like repackage up and shove on the Switch, which has been like a real good thing for them, because for it's sure. like for a lot of people, it's like, man, these guys are banging on all cylinders. Like, look at the quality of titles that they keep on coming out with.
That's why first year of the Switch was one of the best years ever, because they had that back catalog of games that they were probably working on for the Wii U. And then they said 14.7 million people worldwide lifetime sales for the Wii U, not enough. So stop all of that development, put all of that stuff into the Switch instead, and have like one of the craziest first years ever. That's why the Switch just flew off the shelves.
Go ahead.
Well, I was also gonna mention Metroid. I think that every Metroid game has gone down in sales since the last one. So like, they sold this many, and then the next one they sold this many, and the next one they sold this many, and that's not because they're bad games. They just I don't think they're marketed very well because they're really good games for the most part. So having that as the launch title for the Switch 2, it's okay if it's a launch title for the Switch 2 or the Super Switch, but it can't be the one. But then you said Mario Kart. What do you do to Mario Kart to change
it? It doesn't matter. It's Mario Kart. Mario Kart 8, I think, is the best-selling Mario Kart title ever.
Mario Kart 8 is huge. Like, with all the DC, that game is ginormous. It's like all of the Mario Karts ever in one game. Like, when you look at all the DLC stuff, it's outrageous. It's outrageous how much stuff is in Mario Kart 8. But yeah, I knew for a fact that the Switch 1 was going to be a big hit when we heard that the attach rate for Breath of the Wild was like at 110%, meaning like, you know, people were buying it and didn't have a Switch, or they were just buying multiple copies of Zelda. Yeah. And like, that's how, like, that's an unreal attach rate. like, what's your attach rate? It's over 100%. They're like, is that an error? No, we sold more than people own.
Yeah.
Outrageous.
We're that good.
Attach rate. Yeah.
Yeah,
I will say that for Mario Kart, I think that they should just ditch the numbers and just release Mario Kart and have it be a permanent games as a service game where it's
early access, you know, right?
What's that?
Subscription base. Early access and subscription base.
Yeah,
not subscription base. You buy the game, okay, and it's got the base game, and then you buy the DLC separate if you want. But if you buy DLC for Mario Kart, you have it for when the next Nintendo system comes out, that Mario Kart has that DLC, and it's on your account. And you just always move forward to the next system with prettier graphics, but the same courses, the same characters. Like, that just makes sense to me that way. But
I feel like
you can already drive on the walls and underwater and fly. What the hell else can you add to Mario Kart to justify it's the next one?
I don't know. It's not Madden, right? Like, they don't have to like stick to, I don't know. They can do whatever they want. It's Nintendo. I'm sure like creative folks over there. They'll figure it out. It's not, I think they're fine. I was going to say, I like that idea though, especially for Mario Maker. I think that would be a great idea for Mario Maker you have Mario Maker and you make it like, it's just, that is a games as a service. It would fit very well as a games as a service. I think Nintendo would have to do better with sort of their online infrastructure, but I mean, it would be cool if that was still,
You know, it would be really awesome that I don't think Nintendo would ever do, but it would be something for like the super hardcore gamers of everything, is if Nintendo just like double and triple down on all of their Black Swan franchises and had all of those be like their launch title. So they like make Mother 4, they'll do Metroid Prime 4, they'll do like Kid Icarus, like all of these would be just launch titles of like games that are Nintendo franchises that no one really buys, but that's all of the launch titles, like that's what they come out with, and everyone would just lose their minds.
That would be
I think that there's a lot of nostalgia there for those games that aren't super popular, but I don't know if that's enough, but it's super interesting. Who went last? We've lost track. Carrie went last talking about his, and then I did the poll at the same time. I'll leave the poll running. I'll hit my next one, or my last one, I guess. And it's got to be Homeworld 3, because, I mean, if you never played those, they're a real-time strategy game in space. And I loved Homeworld 1. I loved Homeworld 2. A really, really fun space-based RTS game. That genre is dead. Like, nobody is making those kind of games anymore. So I'm very excited to see what happens with Homeworld 3. I can't imagine I'll be good at it, but as long as I can play against the computer, I'll be happy. What's next on your list, Rich?
Let me go last.
Okay, what's next on your list, Gary?
So I'm probably going to do something that I'm probably in the same ballpark as you, Bill. And I don't have anything that I want to say, but Metroid Prime 4 is probably going to be something that I would like, but we've already discussed that.
Fair. All right, Rich, you're last.
I'm going to rapid fire some things. Actually, before I rapid fire, I don't want to be negative, but I'm really anticipating the release of Skull and Bones just for the train wreck effect. I don't want to be that negative, but I it's like, imagine if you said you could release Star Citizen tomorrow. That's kind of what it feels like to me. So I want to see what comes of that.
I mean, if we're talking, so I guess that is like a new release. I like, it's been such like a kind of a meme at this point that I don't even like consider it like a Star Citizen type of thing.
Right. It has a release date.
Yeah. I mean, like for me, if we're talking about like, there's like the other things like God of War Ragnarok, the PC release is something that I'm looking forward to. I don't know if that's this year, but that's something that I've been looking forward to, but that game's already come out. Like, I don't know. That's the like mind space that I'm in. I'm thinking of like new games that, I don't really have anything outside of those two. That
Sushi has to come to PC this year, right?
It's supposed to be February. It's supposed to be next month, isn't it? Or something else?
There's no release date. It's not even, is it announced?
Sushi?
Ghost of Tsushima.
Oh, gotcha. Okay. Yeah. Somebody mentioned that earlier in chat.
But it's not announced.
So, I have no idea.
I mean, I hope it does come, but it's just.
Wait, when is The Last of Us 2 Remastered coming to PC? Is that February?
I think that hasn't been announced either. Not the PC port.
I think it's been announced. Oh, PC port?
Are you talking about
Last of Us 2 Remastered, Carrie?
Yeah, I'm talking. Well, right now I'm talking about Last of Us 2 Remastered.
That'll be on the PlayStation right away. Like, I think January or February, but not PC.
Right. But in my head, there's a February PC release that's in my head for some reason, and I don't know what it is.
Okay. There is Horizon. Horizon is coming in February.
Ah, there we go.
That's what it is. But I think like Ghost of Tsushi has been like. That it was in the NVIDIA leak, and it's basically the only PlayStation port that hasn't come yet that was in that NVIDIA leak. It seems like it's coming. Anyway, should I go through my list real quick?
Rapid fire. Let's hear them.
All right. We mentioned Dragon's Dogma 2, but I want to call that one out because, again, I didn't play the original, but there was so much praise from people that I trust that I really want to play that game. Yeah, go ahead, Gary.
No, I was looking forward to it, but then when I saw the like live action like of it playing, I kind of like got simmered down a bunch on it.
What did is it Itsuno? Is that the director?
Hideki? Oh, I don't know. I'm just talking about like I had high hopes for it from what I played, and from what I saw, it was just like it felt like Dragon's Dogma 1 again, and I was like, is this the sequel?
Did you like Dragon's Dogma 1?
I haven't finished it, but yeah, when I started playing it, there was like a real good sense of like if Dungeons and Dragons, like Capcom's Dungeons and Dragons type of feel to it.
Yeah. The director is Itsuno, and that director did Devil May Cry before that. So it just feels like, you know, like I feel like he's going to be on a roll. So I'm looking forward to it. All right, I'm going to rapid fire. Switch 2. We've mentioned it a few times. I am looking forward to whatever happens there. Princess Peach. I actually am really looking forward to that game. That game looks fun. Prince of Persia. We've talked about that a few times on this podcast.
I'm looking forward to Prince of Persia a lot. That game feels like they're going back to their roots, which makes me excited for that because I played a hell of a lot of that game on my friend's PC back in the day.
Heck yeah. Angerfoot. I don't know if you guys played that during one of the Steam Next Fest. It's one of those Devolver Digital weird, like first person shooter. You kick down doors kind of thing. It looks weird. It looks great. LlamaSoft, the Mentor Story is a like compendium of game. It's like a museum, like a digital museum of
Digital Clips, right?
Yes, Digital Clips of games by Jeff Minter. If you don't know Jeff Minter, he made Space Giraffe and I'm gonna blank on the names now. What Grid Runner,
Tempest.
That's the one I was looking for. He made really weird like vector graphics style games. And I just like the way they're putting this together where it's like a whole like museum, but you play the video game. Mugenix, I think, is coming out this year. So Mugenix is a new game from the guy that did Super Meat Boy and Binding of Isaac.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Ed.
I forget his name. Yes. Sorry, Ed. McMillan. Edmund McMillan.
Yes. Yeah, there we go.
So his brain is ridiculous, so I'm looking forward to seeing whatever he makes. Penny's Big Breakaway is a game by the Sonic Mania team. Yeah.
That's Sonic. Okay.
Yeah. And oh, it looks...
There was that one game, Christmas. It was a Metroidvania game. Oh, goodness gracious.
That came out or is coming out?
No, it's coming out. We actually saw it. Oh, goodness gracious. I forget the name of it. I don't even remember. But I just remember there's like ice going up and he slid up it. I'll have to find the name.
Yeah, please do.
I got, because Metroidvanias are my jam. I love that genre. There's so many really, really great experiences that you can have in that genre. Then a lot of people overlook it because, you know, it's not AAA stuff, because there's not a whole lot of AAA Metroidvanias out there.
Yeah.
Go ahead, Rich.
Two more. Pepper Grinder. I don't know much about it, but it's an action 2D platformer. I think it's published by Devolver. It just looks really cute, really great. So I'm looking forward to that one. That's supposed to come out this year. And then I didn't have this on my list, but Emilio mentioned it in chat. I don't know if it's coming out this year. UFO 50 is a game that Derek Yu, Spelunky developer, has been working on since after Spelunky. So I think since before Spelunky 2. And it's a compilation of like 50 disparate retro games made by different developers. It's not quite like WarioWare, because I don't think they're actually like micro games. I think they're full fledged retro games, but it looks cool and hopefully it comes out this year.
It's called Tales of Kenzera. That's the Metro.
The Metroidvania.
Yeah. Okay. Tales of Kenzera.
I ran the poll in chat asking if you guys wanted to play Final Fantasy VII Rebirth or Dragon's Dogma 2. And man, this is close. Dragon's Dogma 2, 52%. Final Fantasy VII Rebirth, 47%. I have a New Year's resolution that I need to make, and that I am going to finish Final Fantasy VII Remake before during January. Like, that's my goal. So, you know, knock on wood that I can pull that off. We had a couple super chats that came in during the show that I wanted to make sure that we hit. We already hit Sancho 2B, so thank you very much for that one. But Anomander Rake sent in a super chat right at the beginning of the show. They said, off topic, but I can get my hands on an AOK Zoe A1 Pro for a good price, but I'm hesitant to purchase a handheld from a small Chinese company. Any advice? Have either of you guys used any AOK Zoe stuff?
I've had one. Yeah, go ahead, Kerry.
So AOK Zoe is like a weird off branch of OneNet, and I don't work with OneNet myself. So I kind of just, I will distance myself from answering here.
So yeah, I've had an AOK Zoe. I didn't have the best experience with that review unit. I had to have it sent back and get a new one. Yeah, it would be hard for me to recommend based off of that experience. I have seen other reviews which give me similar trepidation. What I will say is I think that, like, even if you can get an AOK Zoe at a discount, I feel like you can get like a Steam Deck at a similar price, whatever that price may be. But we don't know the price, so it may be hard to make that decision without that.
An open box Ally.
Open box Ally, yes.
Oh, I actually had someone mention this to me. They bought an open box Lenovo Legion Go, and I guess the person forgot that they put in a 2 terabyte 2230 drive in there. Like, they upgraded it and then returned it.
Woof.
Yeah, so some guy got off like a super like
GG.
He's like, oh man, look, I don't have to upgrade this. It came with a 2 terabyte. I was like, oh my goodness, feel bad for that crazy guy.
Yeah, GG to the guy that bought it. Yeah, good point on the open box Ally. That's even better, right? Because if you can pick it up in store but if you can return it in store, you can return it at Best Buy. Like, yeah, I feel like you would be better off with that. My problem isn't the Chinese manufacturer. My problem with just a casual person potentially buying there is the problem of returning it or sending it in for repairs. It does take weeks, right? You count it in weeks, not in days.
We also had a super chat come in from Manu. They said, thank you again for the support, by the way. They said, happy New Year's, love the podcast, and thanks for all the recommendations. Just curious, why isn't Deck Ready or ETA Prime on this podcast? No particular reason. I was talking to Deck Ready just the other day, and ETA Prime, I'm betting that they don't know who I am. So, like, I can't imagine that they would come on the show. But there's no reason why Deck Ready hasn't been on yet. It's just usually we're pretty full, and I don't like reaching out to people at the last minute to say, hey, you want to fill a spot? So that's why I haven't had him on yet, but there's no good reason why he can't come on. He's a good guy. I like his stuff.
We haven't talked about it, but I think that would be cool for this year, for 2024, is to have some more content creator guests. I've never, you know, we've worked with a lot of folks over like using just through Steam Pals, right? Like that YouTube channel. Mm-hmm. But I think it'd be cool to talk to like Taki, cool to talk to ETA Prime, Jimmy.
But those guys are both, like faceless. Like what's going to be on the screen?
I don't know. I don't know. I
mean, their hands there.
You could probably do one of those visualizers.
Yeah,
ETA Prime has done a live podcast. He actually, it's like the only way that people can actually see his face is like a super old podcast that he's on. I just think he's just way too busy. Like that dude just is he's a machine.
Yeah. But yeah, I'd love to talk to all those guys.
A lot of content. Like Deck Ready, he has more than one. He's got Deck Ready, he's got Xbox Ready, he's got PS Ready, PlayStation. I don't know what it's called, but he's got many channels. So asking those guys to drop what they're doing and come out is like, that's a big ask. Litzkrieg in chat is saying, you know, some people are too clickbaity. I disagree. Like when I see Deck Ready stuff, when I look at his thumbnail, I don't necessarily know what it's about, but I know that it's about like the Steam Deck and it's news about the Steam Deck. So I'm going to click on it and find out. I have a whole rant about clickbait and people who are always saying that something is clickbait. You cannot possibly put all of the information that is in a video in a title and thumbnail. And people, you gotta play the game if you want people to click on your stuff. You just have to. It's not really a choice. If you want to make videos and put them out on YouTube, you gotta do a little bit of clickbait. As long as you actually deliver on it, then I think it's fine. You know, I don't put up a video like this is how you can make billions of dollars, and then it's just like some stupid video of me playing. Like that's clickbait.
Emu deck.
Right.
You just you emulated all those games.
Yeah, there you go. All right. So well,
Gardner would be cool.
Oh yeah, he's a good guy too.
Yeah.
But again, that's like, I don't like bugging people to ask them. And, you know, a little history of this particular podcast. And I don't know if you guys ever realized this. I invited the whole panel to come on as guests for episode one. But then they were just like, all right, when we do an episode two. And I was like, oh, okay. Well, I guess you guys are like on the show all the time then. I wasn't even anticipating that they would want to come on for the next episode. But having too many people in a show, like that gets real messy. And you see it with some other podcasts where people are just shouting over each other. It's hard to manage when you have tons of people, but I will try and get some other people on the show in the future as well. But that's gonna do
Gary, it. I think Bill just said we overstayed our welcome.
Negative. Yep. That is not what I said. I was just surprised that you guys wanted to be on the show after the first episode. Like that was something that I didn't anticipate. Awesome. So anyway, thank you guys for joining us for the show. There's so many people here and hanging out with us for the live show. You guys are fantastic. Thank you to the people who sent in super chats. This week, Carrie, what's your, do you have any videos coming out this week?
So I have the AmberNick just sent me their, well, sent me a few days ago, but I'm finishing up on it. This is their RG35XXH. It's just a reconfiguration of what they just put out just a little bit ago. And I finally got in the INEO slide, so I'm actually doing work on that as well.
Awesome. And you also recently, I'm going to put the camera on you so people can see it. You also recently have this thing running in the background. You want to tell people about that? Because I think a lot of people watching want to know about that weird screen behind you.
I made a game in Unity because it's like the only way that I could figure out how to actually like send specific HDR data or SDR data outside of like an image. So the idea being that I've already proven that pushing HDR content will use more power. So it uses actually around 2.5 times more power. So by that metric, since we know it pushes more power, and because of what Bob Wolf has done with the SWoLED, we know that it takes a long time for the SWoLED to have any type of image retention issues. And what I've done here is, you can't really see, it's all blurry on my side, but you can see that I have white, green, blue, and red. You can kind of just make out the colors there. And I'm pushing those at their maxed luminance that is possible on the deck. So I am juicing it as much as I can. And then to the left of them, I have SDR brightness levels. So as we're going through those tests, we should see at what brightness levels with what color and whiteness or whatever, that this will affect the panel. So we can be able to see over time. So the first test that I have coming up is around February 11th, which is the 1000 hour mark. So I'll have an update on what that looks like. Also, there's actually a tool that Valve supplies in the Steam Deck OLED. It's an extractor. So we can actually see if that does anything. But apparently, they can, via software, determine what is going on with the panel itself. So we'll see if that works. So there's lots of stuff that we're going to see. It's going to be pretty cool and exciting to see.
I think that, Carrie, you should make T-shirts that are the red, green, and blue, and have people, like, I think the blue is going to burn in the most, or I think the green, and sell T-shirts on your channel. And then you can also report how many people bought the green tees, how many people bought the blue tees, how many people bought the red tees.
Oh. Dude, it's Team Blue all the way. Blue is gonna have image retention issues first. Has to.
All right. Well, Rich, what have you been working on? What's going on this week?
Yeah, so I just had a video with my 15 favorite Steam Deck games of 2023, so definitely check that out. And I'm taking my time on the next couple videos, but I am working on reviews for the Aya Neo Slide and the GPD Win Mini, which are both interesting devices, to say the least. I will put a PSA out there for, you know, the 350 of us in the room right now. The Aya Neo Slide doesn't have a 3.5 millimeter jack, which I kind of find baffling at this point. Yeah. So that's a PSA for anyone watching.
Pulled an Apple on you.
So are you expecting to use USB-C headphones?
I'm using Bluetooth. I'm using Bluetooth. That's what I have. I mean, I do have 3.5 millimeter, and that's my go-to. I discovered this at night when I was actually playing it in bed, right? Like, I'm like, all right, let me plug in my headphones. And I'm like, no, this can't be. And my wife is asleep, so I'm like trying to minimize the light that I'm shining on the device, but I'm like, this can't. I looked behind the screen, I bent the screen forward, I looked in the micro SD card slot. I'm like, it has to be here somewhere, and it wasn't there. So
it's not like it's a phone where they're making it razor thin and you get rid of that, it saves a bunch of space. Like, this is a handheld PC. It's got room for a freaking headphone jack, right?
It's a chunky boy. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a chunky boy. I will say GPD's done this, so I'm not making excuses for it. I don't know what the engineering looks like, but I will say it's like, it's thicker than usual. And I think that's because of the keyboard that's right there. Are you laughing because I said thicker than usual?
I thought you were talking to me. I was laughing because, Adby, I don't know how to say your name, man. I'm sorry. He said, "I need you displaying courage." Yeah. That's too funny.
real quick to Emilio. I do actually have a side thing with talking about GameScope and other stuff that I'm going to be doing. So I do talk to people from Valve, but there are questions that I asked to Valve that had these questions in there, but they never answered me. I also asked for any type of program that they might have used internally to test the screen, and they didn't reply to me, which is why I made my own thing. So yes, I do talk to them. Sometimes I just talk and I don't hear anything back. So sometimes it's like me just talking to a wall.
Basically all the time. You rarely get a response back from Valve.
Yeah. Well, anyway, those are the videos that we've got coming out this week. Stay tuned, everybody. I don't know yet. I've got the podcast that just came out. I put out a video on Friday, but I might be publishing my new channel later on this week. We will see. I've got one and a half more videos to make before I publish it. And just so everybody knows, most of you are not going to care about this because it's about content creation. It's not about video games. But when I do push it live, I'll let you know about it so that people can check it out, because I just love talking about content creation stuff. But anyway, that's going to do it for this episode of the Nerd Nest podcast. Thank you guys so much for hanging out with us. And you could have been anywhere on January 1st. And you decided to hang out with us instead of all of the other things you could have been doing. And we really, really appreciate it. So stay rad, everybody. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
See ya.